AgriTalk is brought to you by Full Scale from Helena. Grow strong returns this season with breakthrough foliar nutrition from Full Scale at Reproduction. And by propane. Propane is the energy for everyone, especially farmers. Environmentally friendly propane can fuel most anything on the farm. See how at propane.com. Weekend rains over some important areas of the Corn Belt weighed on grain prices overnight, but corn has climbed back to unchanged early in the day session. We'll get into what to expect next for Corn Belt weather, get an update on the used machinery market, learn about ethanol exports, and what the Inflation Reduction Act might mean for the future of biofuels.
Live from 8822 Day via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning we begin with a conversation with Machinery Pete Greg Peterson. Then it's Scott Richmond from the Renewable Fuels Association. And right after the news, Michael Clark from BAMWX with a weather update. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson. Now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Laurie.
All right, do you remember what happened on 8822 Day?
Let's see. I think the sky fell, didn't it?
Well, pretty close. Yeah. That was the first yet failed attempt to have a baseball game under the lights at Wrigley Field.
Oh, yes.
The game got started. Everything was looking good. Rhino hit a dinger, and then it started to rain, and it's almost like God said there should not be lights at Wrigley Field.
Go back home from the ballpark.
You know
There's
what? At that
no
time,
game in the
at
dark.
That time, all I was doing was sitting on the roof of my apartment building in Chicago, which was only about three blocks away from Wrigley, and I was kind of trying to take in some of the festivities from the rooftop.
Now, I would imagine you had this sort of setup where you're sitting in your chair there, and you could just sort of drop your left hand, and it would fall into a cooler. Does that seem about right?
That might be, yeah, that time, probably, very
it
likely.
Sounds like a pretty sweet setup.
Yes, it was.
Attaboy.
And the rain fell, and the first official game under the lights was played on 8/9/88. Not nearly as catchy as 8/8, is it?
No, but it caught on eventually, so it worked.
Yep. Well, for baseball fans, it did. You know, if it was 8/8/88, who knows? It could have been one of the most important. I don't know. You know,
the universe may have imploded with that
it
sort of synchronicity.
It might have.
Yeah.
It
you don't want
have.
That.
Absolutely beautiful weather here right now. Some heavy rains here at the Flory Ranch over the weekend. But we've only got about 65 degrees here this morning. Overcast, low humidity, and it's a windows open kind of morning, and let's get some fresh air in the place.
Indeed.
Okay, yeah, let's get to it. What you got in the news?
Well, Chip, Senate Democrats on Sunday voted to pass the $740 billion, 755-page tax, climate, and healthcare reconciliation package dubbed the Inflation Reduction Act. Democrats successfully blocked most GOP amendments. Debate began Saturday and stretched late into Sunday afternoon when a total of 41 proposed changes were considered and voted upon. All 50 Senate Democrats voted for the bill, and all 50 Republicans voted against it. With Vice President Kamala Harris casting the tie-breaking vote, House lawmakers will return from recess on Friday and will then vote on the package, expected to pass the House fairly easily. Chip?
Yeah. You never know what to expect from the House. That's more so from the Senate. I get that. You never know what to expect from the House, but I would say that you're probably right when you say that it's expected to pass easily.
Well, proponents hope the measure will raise over $700 billion in government revenue over 10 years, instituting a new 15% corporate minimum tax, a new 1% tax on corporate stock buybacks, and would pour $80 billion into the Internal Revenue Service. The bill allows roughly $374 billion in climate and energy spending. As part of Democrats' concession to Joe Manchin, the bill contains provisions calling for offshore oil lease sales in the Gulf of Mexico and off the coast of Alaska, and a commitment to help take up a separate measure to ease the permitting of new energy projects.
Yeah, we will talk about some of that $374 billion in climate and energy spending with Scott Richmond from RFA when he gets on here. But, boy, there's a lot of incentive in there on the EVs and the buildup mm-hmm. of the solar farms and the wind turbine farms. So there's $374 billion. I mean, in this day and age when we toss around $1 trillion every now and then, it yeah. doesn't seem like that much, but that is a huge amount of money.
Well, the Fed, relatively fresh off its second consecutive three-quarter point rate hike, expects more to come. According to Fed Governor Michelle Bauman, high inflation is a bigger threat to the economy than slowing growth. Bauman noted if prices continue to surge like they've been doing over the past few months, it, quote, could lead to a further economic softening, risking a prolonged period of economic weakness coupled with high inflation like we experienced in the 1970s. There's that decade again surfacing, Chip, the 1970s.
Yeah, we don't want anything to do with that.
Ukrainian President Zelensky accused Russia of engaging in nuclear terror by shelling a nuclear power plant in southern Ukraine. Russian forces said the artillery fire had in fact come from Ukrainian soldiers. The shelling damaged three radiation sensors and wounded one worker, according to Ukraine's nuclear power operator. The United Nations nuclear watchdog implored both sides to give international monitors access to the site. Meanwhile, two more ships carrying corn and soybeans departed Ukrainian Black Sea ports, taking the total to 10 that have sailed under the new grain export deal, even as the conflict escalates on land. And speaking of conflict, Taiwan said on Saturday that China's military drills appear to simulate an attack on the self-ruled island.
Yeah.
After multiple Chinese warships and aircraft, including fighter jets, bombers, destroyers, and escort ships, crossed the median line of the Taiwan Strait. Chip.
Speaker Pelosi left quite the wake, didn't she?
That she did.
She's back home and probably trying to protect her bank accounts from hackers, from Chinese hackers. But the people of Taiwan are dealing with the aftermath of her visit, and it's something that we have to watch very closely. Thank you very much, Davis. Let's bring in Michael Clark, BAMWX.com. Good morning, Michael.
Good morning, Chip. How are you?
Good. We got some soaking rains up here in northeast Iowa over the weekend. Sounds like some key areas were missed. Where are those key areas?
Yeah, for sure. Most of Nebraska, central and southern Iowa, central Illinois, Indiana as well. A lot of Kansas and northern Missouri missed as well. So a big area overall missed. The only place that really got beneficial rain was northern Iowa, southern Minnesota. And Chip, in northwestern Illinois, as much as 13 inches of rain has fallen in the last 24 hours. So I don't know if you would call that beneficial at this point.
Yeah. That track is following fairly closely to what you described to us last Monday on the show, right?
Yeah, it is. It's just kind of that flow aloft, you know, and that's probably going to continue, Chip.
Okay.
I don't see that changing.
Okay. So what do we expect here over the next couple of weeks?
Yeah, I think the persistence is the best word to describe this pattern. The western half of the ag belt is very warm and dry. On the northern edge and the eastern ag belt into Indiana, Ohio, cooler and wetter risks. Illinois is kind of on the line, you know. But if you divide it in two, the east is looking better. The west, it's not looking that great right now.
Okay. All right. We're into crunch time, not only on grain fill on the corn, but on soybeans and trying to build up that pod and seed size. So, obviously, weather here over the next 3 weeks is very critical. Thank you, Michael.
Thanks, Chip.
You bet. That's Michael Clark, BAMWX.com. I think Machinery Pete is here. We're going to talk to him next.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now, you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Machine Repeat here, folks. This segment of AgriTalk brought to you by our friends at Dakota Ag Innovations, makers of Dakota Shine, the best way I've seen to fix faded paint. Go to dakotashine.com or call 888-996-7801.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. Glad that you're with us on this Monday morning. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Davis Michelson is along for the ride as well.
I'm awake. Yeah, what? Yes.
Good.
Yes.
Good.
Good morning.
Glad that you are paying attention. That was your test. You get one a week. You get one pop quiz a week, and you just passed it. Congratulations.
Already?
Yes.
Already?
Oh, I'm checking out for the whole rest of the week. I'm out. Sorry,
yeah,
buddy.
I know it.
Should have thought of that.
I know it. Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete, is our regular Monday morning guest. He joins us right now. Good morning, Greg.
Hey, guys. How you doing?
Doing real fine. Real fine. Everything okay up your way?
Yeah, everything's okay. We got some rain up here in Minnesota. Saturday, I think, quite a bit towards where I grew up, west central part of the state. A little less down here around Rochester, but nice to see the rain.
Yeah. Yeah, we had like 4.5 inches on Saturday night here, and then I think it was close to another inch in about three waves last night.
Wow, that's
so
a lot.
Yeah, it's a whole lot better than the 13 plus that fell in some areas of northwest Illinois. No question about that. That's too much of a good thing. So
feel for those folks.
You bet, you bet. All right, man, let's get into it. Let's get the pick of the week.
Yeah, I tell you again, it's so hard to pick one thing. And I'm trying to be honest when I say this. I think last week, again, might have been one of the hottest weeks I've ever seen, Chip. But given that it's August, we're heading towards harvest season here. I want to start off with combines. So last 6 days, I've seen three John Deere 9560 STS combines that are three of the five highest in the past 5 years. So the pick of the week, we're going to go last Wednesday on a farm auction in Eagle Grove, Iowa, by my good friends at Ryerson Auction Realty. They had a 2005 model, 2,053 engine hours on it, sold for $101,000. So you're talking, you know, 17-year-old combine there on the smaller side going for over 100K. And that's the highest I've seen in the last 5 years. Now, the same day, last Wednesday in Warren, Indiana, Sullivan Auctioneers had an online farm auction where they sold a nice 07 model 9560 with 2,635 engine hours. That brought 79K. And then Saturday in Sabetha, Kansas, Younger Auction Company sold a Sharp 06 model 9560 with 2,359 engine hours for 89,000. So good used combines with a little age on them are just smoking hot.
You know, we've talked so many times about the hot tractor market, but this feels pretty spicy too on the combine side.
It's not pretty spicy. This is like exceedingly strong. And I think what I'm seeing here again is this growing echo of, you know, basically buying as a hedge, good used equipment. You know, we're coming up on harvest season here. And again, because the dealer used inventories are tight, because prices are rising on the new stuff, it's problematic to get the new stuff. You got to fend for yourself and you got to be ready to roll when you got to roll. And if it rains 4 inches in Denver, Iowa, when my window for harvest is short, I got to crank. So I think again, you know, parts availability is an issue. So
use
combines, use planters, everything's on fire right now.
Greg, that comes up. It seems like that comes up in every conversation that I have with a farmer right now when we talk about their concerns. And it comes around to, listen, if something breaks down, I don't know if I'm going to be able to get the part.
Yep.
Do you feel like that's a legitimate concern? Is there proof out there that we've got part shortages?
Well, as it pertains to combines, I mean, I think we're humans and what we remember was last fall, which was we were wading into it all together. And, you know, everyone heard the stories about folks having to drive 300, 400, 500 miles for that one widget they needed on the combine. And you can't have that. Thankfully, the weather was fairly cooperative last fall, but now we're getting these rains here. And you know, it's just actually, honestly, I'm beginning to see it. Farmers are having to be so proactive on the equipment front to get what they need. I'm starting to see it with the used sprayer market. Looking ahead for next year, people getting aggressive and auction prices are rising. So combine sprayers, and then there's the tractor market, which I think we can pivot to here, Chip. But
yeah, let's get on to it.
Unbelievable prices we're seeing all over the country. So Saturday, that same sale in Sabetha, Kansas, where the 9560 brought $89,000. This was a retirement sale for Mark and Kathy Carpenter. Very nice equipment. They had a 2006 John Deere 7820 mechanical front tractor, 2,629 hours sharp, second owner. But the thing went for $132,000. Now, that's a record by $25,000, Chip. I mean, believe me, I've seen a lot of 7820 sold at auction. 107 was the record from May 19th of 12 in Denton, North Carolina.
10 years ago.
That had 1,500 hours on it. This one Saturday brought 132 with 2,600 hours on it. Also on the sale of Ford 9030 bidirectional, nice rig with a loader, 4,360 hours, went $45,000, third highest auction price ever. And to show you, this is not just tractors and combines. How about this? A drill, a 2008 15-foot John Deere 1590 no-till drill, one owner, brought $40,500. And then the used hay equipment market is hot. So they had an 04 John Deere 567 round baler with just, I think, 9,200 bales on it. That brought $19,000, tied for the fourth highest the past 6 years. So I'm telling you, I don't mean to be a broken record here, folks. I truly don't. I've reported through downtimes when prices were soft, but
that's right.
This is the supply on the dealer lots is tight, and we all know the supply chain on the new side, and the market's just, it's not going higher by the week. It's going higher by the day here lately.
Yeah. With that in mind, take us back to Warren, Indiana.
Yeah, well, again, so we mentioned that Warren, Indiana, last Wednesday, Sullivan Auctioneers had a sale where that they had a 9560 for $79,000. So they, another tractor record was set. They had an 04 John Deere 8120 mechanical front, 2,749 hours. That went for $144,000. Again, record by $6,000. And we got to go back to 2012. An auction I filmed, I was there, I filmed it, Ridgeway, Iowa, March 31st, 2012, was an 04 model with 1,000 hours, brought $138,000. And again, last Wednesday, Warren, Indiana, $144,000, which, by the way, now, if we talk 20 series Deere tractors, which, you know, what, 02 to 05-ish, in the last 3 weeks, we've seen a record on a 7820, an 8120, and an 8420. Back on July 21st, Delta, Iowa, an 8420 went for $182,000, and that was $15,000 over the record. So that's what the market is right now, folks.
It is
I've left you speechless, Chip.
Yeah, it's a wow market.
Yeah, it is.
It is absolutely a wow market. I think you might be right. This might be the hottest week you've reported on yet.
Well, it's I can't pick one thing. That's the thing. So I try to blog about it. Now, not everything is obviously, go to our website, machinerypete.com. It's all free to look at. Not every single piece is, it's got to be good condition, but when it is good, this is the kind of stuff we're seeing. So,
All right. A week ago, there was a news item out that kind of, it raised my eyebrows. Tell us about Big Iron and Sullivan.
Yeah, news release went out last Monday. Big Iron, technically you'd say acquired Sullivan Auctioneers, but really, you know, they're just moving forward together. So I did post a podcast, Machine Repeat podcast, where I had Dan Sullivan and Mark Stock, two guys I've known, respected for 30 plus years and been in the business, on talking about the deal. And, you know, when you posted, I knew it would happen. A lot of people would be like, oh my goodness, you know, this is what it is. You know, there's mergers and, you know, But I'm telling you, when you listen to the guys talk about the deal, they're laser focused on serving sellers, and it's all about reach and, you know, building your capacity to bring in more buyers on the farmland side and on the machinery side. And both companies have been innovative, push the envelope, in particular, well, on the online front. So Big Iron started in 2009. They committed to online only, which if you think about it, is unbelievable. Yeah. And Sullivan Auctioneers, right when the pandemic hit, 2 days later, Dan called me and said, Pete, we're going online only. So you're talking about two vibrant, great companies, great staffs coming together to extend their reach. So, yeah, big deal there. So give the podcast a listen for more details.
Both are innovative companies that are dedicated to giving customers what they need and the service that they need. So
yeah, and the buying experience. Exciting. I know they're very focused on that. So
yes,
hats off to the guys.
Yep, very good. I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to talk about that threshing machine that sold.
Next week, Chip. I'll fill you in on that one. That was fun.
Save it for next week. All right, Greg. Thank you, sir. We'll talk to you again next week. That is Greg Peterson, Machinery Pete. We're going to talk ethanol. And how about a little Inflation Reduction Act influence on biofuels? Scott Richmond coming up next.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farmincentive to see if you're eligible.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
And joining us now, Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Beige, we were lower in the overnight, but they've kind of clawed their way back to unchanged in corn and soybeans.
Yeah, not a whole lot of activity going on. I mean, you mentioned the overnight weakness, clawed back here to near unchanged and just pretty quiet, to be honest with you. You know, watching the weather, watching the U.S.-China tension situation, watching Ukrainian grain export situation and amongst other things. So a lot of volatile issues in here and relatively quiet price action, though, to start the week.
Yeah, we do have some double-digit gains going in wheat. What happened there?
Well, that wheat was the downside leader overnight. Not on anything in particular, I don't think. You know, some of the Ukrainian grain shipments, but none of those shipments have included wheat. Mostly it's been corn. Some sunflower oil and meal and a shipment of soybeans, but no wheat going out of Ukraine. So that might have propped up buyer interest in here at mid-morning, but really there's no real explanation other than the outside markets are trending a little bit more friendly here as we open up the week.
Yeah, and just a quick mention, we had some corn and soybean export sales announced this morning. That may have helped the markets climb back from those overnight lows. Take us over to the livestock trade.
Well, we got firmer prices here. So being led higher by feeder cattle, despite the fact that seller interest is limited in the corn market, the feeder cattle are pushing to the upside. Live cattle, they're mildly weak or mildly firmer this morning. And, you know, we're seeing buyer interest start to build here in the hog market on the rising cash index.
Oh, yeah, that cash index continues to pull the futures to the upside. Thank you, Brian. That's Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady on Markets Now.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors. Do you suffer from talking on the radio phobia? No problem. Send us a tweet at hashtag AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Wow. that, like I said, Davis, that might be the hottest week of used machinery sales that Greg has talked about yet.
You did refer to it as a wow market. Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. And when you think about the year-on-year moves and the highest, you've got tractors and combines from the mid-2000s that are selling at record prices that were established 10 years ago. That machine is 10 years older with that many more hours on it, and we're still breaking the records. It just is a you hate to use the word panic, but it almost feels like some of these auctions, there's a little bit of panic buying going on with the idea that if I don't get this one, I don't know where I'm going to get one.
Well, you say you hate to use the word panic, but I feel like you're running out of words. Like, he had you speechless at a moment here, and now here you are trying to,
yeah,
to convey
not use
to
a
us.
Word. Yeah, not use like, a word that I just used.
I don't know, bro. There's only so many words we can use at this point.
That's right. Let's see if we can find some more words to use.
Scott just go Richman. With wow.
Just go with wow. Scott Richman is the chief economist at the Renewable Fuels Association, and we can say wow about the ethanol exports in the first half of the year. I want to talk about what got us there with Scott. Scott, welcome back to AgriTalk.
Well, thanks for having me on.
Glad that you are here. Tell me, you know, ethanol exports are one of those things that it comes up almost as an afterthought, as something that is supporting the industry. But that is not the case. What is driving the ethanol export? I mean, it's not an afterthought. This is a market. This ethanol export market is something that's we got to look at right on the front burner, right?
Yeah, well, I will tell you, the RFA and our partner organizations have really been working hard for probably about a decade now to develop international markets for ethanol. And things are going well internationally. We've had strong usage domestically. And I think that, a big driver behind that is just the competitiveness of ethanol right now. But, you know, just to back up for one second to give your listeners a feel for where we are right now. The trade data for June came out on Thursday, and it was some good news. For the first 6 months of the year, the first half of the year, we had the second largest exports ever, ethanol exports ever. At about 825 million gallons. It's second only to 2018, which was a record year. And additionally, even though exports usually dip a little bit in the summer, we still had over 100 million gallons in exports in June for the ninth straight month. And that's the first time we've ever had 9 months in a row of over 100 million gallons. So, you know, the export market is, like you said, it's not focused on as much as the domestic market, but it's coming in strong this year.
Yeah, yeah, and it's gaining importance. Whenever you talk about exporting more than a billion gallons, and it looks like we're going to do that in 2022, it siphons off the extra supply from the market. And think about what, guys, listeners, think about what that means to the corn market when you siphon off the extra supply that's out there. It just lifts the weight from the market, and it brings some profitability to the producers, right?
Yeah, it definitely does. This has been a good year for ethanol producers, and there's been some debate about whether we're seeing a little bit slower gasoline consumption domestically. So this is with higher prices and in fears of a recession, things like that. So this is coming at a really good time. But the big picture is that there's a few different things that are driving it. Ethanol has been highly competitive against gasoline this year. There have been times where we've been at a discount of a dollar or more to gasoline U.S. wholesale prices this year. with the drop in gasoline prices lately, we're probably at about a 50-cent discount. So that's still a pretty good discount, and that's gotten noticed internationally. So some price sensitive destinations that we have are picking up ethanol. They've been bringing in ethanol. We've got it's really multiple factors that have been behind it. Canada has been our largest market, and that's continued. India and the United Kingdom are pushing higher level ethanol blends, and we've had somewhat of a return of Brazil to the market now that they've suspended their tariff through the end of the year. So it's not just been one thing, but it's been a really strong market for a variety of reasons. So we've got different legs that stool is standing on, which is a positive development.
Yeah, you mentioned some of the importing countries. Give me an update on Mexico, Scott. That's a country that when I look at the amount that we've exported to Mexico in the past, I kind of shake my head and say that should be a better market for U.S. ethanol than what it is.
Yeah, so Mexico is a little bit tricky. We are exporting significant amounts of ethanol to Mexico. We had hoped that by now it would be an even larger market. There are some policy issues down there where they had set into place policies a few years ago to go ahead and allow higher level blends. That got turned back upon review, and then the current administration is very pro Pemex. They're very pro. They've taken a bit of a nationalist view of the energy sector, whereas the energy sector had been opening up prior to this administration. So we're still hopeful, but we need to see what the rules of the road are going to be. And then hopefully those will allow further development of that market. But it's something that we and our partners, including the U.S. Grains Council, have put a lot of time and attention into.
Yep. One country that shows up on the list consistently, I don't know if it was on there in June or not, but it always, you kind of look at it and say, why? Why is Saudi Arabia importing ethanol from the U.S.
Yeah, octane and good values on ethanol relative to other sources of octane. You see that in other markets over there, like the United Arab Emirates. So it is a little bit humorous to note that we are exporting substantial amounts, to markets like that, and then to places like Singapore that act as a bit of a hub over in Asia. But that's a nice one to be able to talk about.
That octane value, that there's your evidence of the value that is there. Let's go over to the reconciliation bill, the Inflation Reduction Act, if we could here quick, Scott. Just give us an overview, kind of a top line, top item lines on what it means for biofuels.
Yeah, so it's what your listeners should know is that this bill has some really good provisions for biofuels right now and then developing into the future. So one of those is $500 million over 8 years for higher blend infrastructure. It's not only for ethanol, but it will benefit ethanol. And we've seen that as the number of stations that offer E15 has expanded in the past, somewhat in response to these sorts of incentives, E15 consumption has gone up substantially, and this will help with that going forward. There are some market opportunities that this is going to help. RFA members just about a year ago pledged 70% greenhouse gas savings by 2030 and net zero by 2050, if not earlier. There's some provisions in here that are in line with that, including an enhanced provision for carbon capture and storage, which can be the single largest play for getting for reducing the carbon intensity of ethanol. And then there is a new provision for sustainable aviation fuel that as we get the carbon intensity of ethanol down, it can be a feedstock and intermediate product going into sustainable aviation fuel production, which is a large scale opportunity for the future.
Yeah. Oh, it certainly is. And that SAF has got $1.25 per gallon tax credit on it too, right?
Yeah, it's even more than the current biomass-based diesel tax credit. There's a reason for that. There's a little bit lower yield, product yield on that. And, you know, there's some significant capital costs up front for doing that. So there's a reason for the higher value, but it's a hard to decarbonize sector, and it's something that can really use the volume and the carbon reductions from ethanol.
Yep. So put the incentives where they're needed the most to get the production up and give the jet fuel market a chance to decarbonize as much as possible. Good stuff. Thank you, Scott. I appreciate you, man.
Well, thanks for having me on today.
You bet. That is Scott Richmond. He is the chief economist at the Renewable Fuels Association. So some of the provisions in the Inflation Reduction Act, you got to kind of hold your nose on. But, boy, when it comes to biofuels, there's support there. Davis and I will be right back to wrap things up.
To produce higher yields and greater value at harvest, timing is everything. Full Scale from Helena helps soybeans reach their full potential with breakthrough foliar nutrition and reproduction. Full Scale delivers beneficial plant extracts and micronutrients with the added efficiency of ENC formulation technology. It gives your soybeans every opportunity to grow strong returns this season. Contact your local ag retailer or Helena representative to learn more about Full Scale. Always read and follow label instructions and check registration status before use.
From powering irrigation engines to warming buildings, propane has always been a part of American farm life. Now you can be a part of propane's future and save money at the same time. The Propane Farm Incentive Program is a research initiative that provides farmers up to $5,000 towards the purchase of new propane-powered equipment. In exchange, participants share performance data to make tomorrow's ag operations more cost-effective, more efficient, and more environmentally friendly with propane. Getting started is simple. Visit propane.com/farm incentive to see if you're eligible.
Knowledge is power. We're here to charge your batteries. AgriTalk.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everyone, and welcome to a fresh, brand spanking new week. Davis Michelson here, your pal with Chip Flory. How you doing, Chip?
Yeah, doing all right.
Yeah, yeah. Special shout out to one of our local communities here in Central Iowa, the good folks of Parkersburg.
Oh,
I mentioned on Friday.
Did you have fun?
We had an absolute blast. Now, here was the thing: it's their town celebration, or it was. And they had a really nice, like double wide flatbed stage set up. I mean, dude, we've set up on a hay rack.
Yeah.
Which, you know, great. We'll play just about anywhere, but it does feel a little bit like, you know, setting up inside of a thimble kind of a thing on a hay rack, double wide trailer and everything. Well, we roll up and the weather just looked absolutely sketchy, really rough. And so we opted to move the big musical evening into Mad Dogs, Mad Dogs Saloon. Shout out to Mad Dogs. if you go in there, don't look Mad Dog directly in the eye. Okay. And you'll be fine. Just a word of warning. Just don't look straight, just sort of avert your gaze. Well, we had a wonderful time though. Thanks to the good folks of Parkersburg and the surrounding communities who came out. Absolute blast. It was Sydney's birthday. And they did get a rare performance out of us. I don't know the words to Piano Man.
Yes, you do.
Some reason, I just refuse to learn them.
That's false.
It's like an epic, like, you know, there's 18 verses to that song.
Yeah, you can't take the pressure of it.
Davy, who's still in the Navy, on and on and on and you might as well ask for Freebird, you know? You got a better chance of hearing Freebird. Well, turns out my guitar player knows the words to the song.
Okay.
And somebody requested it and put a little dab in the tip jar.
Yeah.
We did Piano Man. We normally don't do that, But Parkersburg had us so in love with them that we lost our minds momentarily and actually did Piano Man. Anyway, thank you, Parkersburg. Thank you, Parkersburg.
Yeah, and you know, if there's anybody that's going to be weather aware, any community, it's Parkersburg.
Dude, I was standing out by a food truck getting a delicious beef sandwich and a hunk of cornbread. This cornbread, it was like a religious experience.
Yeah.
But all of a sudden, it went from wicked, crazy, oppressive hot, and then this breeze kind of picked up, and you could feel that the breeze was cold.
Yep.
Like the air was still hot, but the breeze was cold, and then it was no longer a breeze. It was like a sand blast.
Yeah.
Sky got all green and freaky. We got a pretty decent shower. We were glad we were inside. Anyway, shout out to Parkersburg, Iowa. Love you guys. The Inflation Reduction Act.
Yes.
We've been a little critical about the Inflation Reduction Act. Senator Grassley is concerned about the provisions about the IRS.
$80 billion for 87,000 new employees. The word is that some of these employees will be making more than the vice president of the United States, according to Jim Wiesmeyer on This Morning Signal to Noise.
Can we reduce inflation by spending more money?
No. No, you can't. You can't. And so when they talk about, you know, everybody describes this bill as the climate, health, and, IRS tax bill. But the name of it is the Inflation Reduction Act. And when you think, okay, where's the inflation reduction? They keep pointing at the lower cost for the Affordable Care Act, and negotiating on the cost of prescription drugs for Medicare. The negotiation on it, on the first 10 high-priced drugs available through Medicare, negotiations on it don't start until 2026. All right, then there's going to be another 15 drugs that are going to be negotiated in 2027, and another 15 in 2028.
So hold on, you're saying negotiation for that. It's not that they kick in 2026.
No, they just start negotiating.
The discussion begins in 4 years.
Right. Okay, so the bill says that it will save an estimated $288 billion over the decade. I wonder what it's going to cost us, because the CBO estimated that the measure would result in as many as 15 fewer new drugs over the next 30 years, because if you're negotiating price and taking profit out, you're removing incentive to move forward and removing some of those profits that are reinvested in research for new drugs. The University of Chicago has estimated that that the changes and the negotiations on the drug costs could result in 342 fewer drugs over 18 years. I don't know how you come up with that kind of a number. I'm just saying that that's what they're saying. The other thing is, when I talk with family, friends about this part of the bill, their attitude is, well, that'd be nice. Be nice to have, lower prescription costs. That'll be really nice. Well, they expect that to start now.
Yeah.
And the negotiations don't even start to 2026. I don't think it's going to be an issue for the 2022 elections, but by the time we get to the 2024 elections and the negotiations on these lower drug costs haven't even started yet, that's going to be a big problem for the Democrat Party, I think, and especially for President Biden, because he has been saying all along, this will reduce, because we are going to reduce the cost of health care in this country, it will reduce inflation. Well, you want to talk about waiting for the out years in a bill.
Yeah.
That's waiting for the out years. That's playing the long, long game. And I don't know if he's got the long game to play with the elections coming up in 2 years. It's strange.
They just want to get the Green New Deal through, right?
Yes.
Is that what's happening here?
Yes, absolutely.
This is just the Green New Deal in disguise.
It certainly feels that way, and the tax credits for the EV manufacturers and purchasers. Man,
they got to get off that. Enough already.
So it's coming.
Don't get me started.
Thanks for listening this morning. Thank you, Davis. Appreciate it. You getting me started on that here this
right?
morning. Yeah, come back this afternoon. Sam Hudson, Corn Belt Marketing on AgriTalk.